Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to the Blonde Files podcast. I'm your host, Arielle Laurie. And you guys, we are kicking 2020 off right with this episode today. I'm talking to Shanae Alexander, who is an entrepreneur, lifestyle personality, writer, speaker, and wellness expert based in Brooklyn, New York. Her message is to empower people to be better through positive thinking, active change, and self-love, with a lot of laughing and curse words along the beeping way. So, a little backstory. Shanae is somebody who I have personally followed on Instagram since I started this account. So, in February, that will be 4 years. Crazy. Shanae did BBG back in the day, and of course, you probably all know that that's how my Instagram account came to fruition. So back then, I was following all the girls who were doing it, and there were a couple OGs, and Shanae was one of them. So it's been really cool to watch her evolve over the years. That sounds stalkerish, but hey, we all do it. And see how she has kind of developed into this powerhouse. And she delivered in person. So this is such a great episode to start the year with, because so many of you know and love Shanae as well from following her. And she's just so strong and insightful, and she tells it like it is. And she's an empowered woman, and she empowers other women. You're going to feel empowered after listening to this episode, I hope. So we talk about how she got to where she is today, how getting fired from her first career was actually the best thing that happened, how to leverage our own lows and to use fear as a motivator. We talk about going through hard things and how that actually allows us to empathize and help other people, and how struggles are actually what guide our lives. We also talk about her passion for fitness and how she was most unhappy at her quote-unquote fittest. And we get into body confidence and how that can come with both positive and negative thoughts. Then we also talk about having a business on Instagram, building an audience, and being vulnerable with them. And we talk about lavender-scented vaginas, but that's not till the very end. So you're going to have to get through the rest of it to find out what the heck we were talking about. So I just so enjoyed talking to Shanae, and I went on her podcast as well, which is getting released on the same date that this podcast is released. So make sure you go check out that episode on Press Send, which is Shanae's podcast. And yeah, listen to them both. We kind of build on topics that we were talking about in each other's episodes. So kind of similar to what I did with Liz Moody a few episodes back. I kind of did the same thing with Shanae, although her podcast is a little bit different of a format, but we still talk about really important stuff in both of them. So make sure you listen to both. And if you guys enjoy this episode, or you just enjoy the podcast in general, please, please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Something that just takes a second on your end, and it makes a huge difference in supporting the podcast. So I really appreciate you guys. I love this community. I appreciate your support, and enjoy the episode.
We're on.
All right. Okay. So I'm here with Shanae Alexander. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you here. We were talking earlier about how we both kind of started our Instagrams and the fitness journeys we were on. And
we've really been taking it back.
Yeah. We were reminiscing. So you were actually like part of the OG BBG group that I followed when I started.
Yeah.
So it was like you, Jera was another one who was on the podcast
a while ago. Yeah, you've met Jera. Have you met her in person?
We didn't meet in person. We did it remotely.
Okay. Well, yeah. You guys got to get together.
I know.
We also need to have a dog date. So you need to bring your dog and to New York. She'll bring her dog who hates other dogs. And I'll bring my dog who's obsessed with other dogs. It'll be a really great little meeting.
She and I have the same managers too.
Oh,
so
nice.
So we have that connection. Yeah. So I want to talk about all of the amazing things that you're doing today and talk about how you got here. But let's rewind to start. And can you tell us what you were doing before you got into social media and what you wanted to do?
Yes. So I'm here because I've gone through a series of failures. So I think that's kind of life, if we're being honest. So I came to New York in 2007 and I was like, I am going to work in magazines. It was my dream to be the next Anna Wintour. I wanted to be edgy Anna Wintour. And now the only thing that we have in common is a haircut. And so I was like, I'm destined to work in magazines. So I got an internship at Nylon. It was the heyday of Nylon magazine, and I loved my internship, but I really realized that I didn't want anyone's job that was working there, and I found it to feel really unfulfilling and kind of unhappy. Like, I felt this sense of unhappiness in that industry, and so I was like, well, what the hell am I going to do? And so I looked for a job on Craigslist, like any good New Yorker in 2007 did, and found an ad to be a marketing coordinator. And so I was like, well, I don't have any experience in this because I've been planning and working in fashion editorial for my whole life, but I'm going to go to the interview. So I did. The person interviewing me who was the owner of the company, he looked at my resume and he clearly had never seen it before. And he was like, you don't have any experience for this job. And I was like, you're so right. But I was like, I'm really, really bad at failing. So let me just show you. Give me 3 months. I said, if I'm not doing a good job by 3 months, I'll fire myself and I'll find you someone new.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. The balls on this 21-year-old were huge.
I was going to ask, where do you think that came from? Is it just kind of naivete and like being young and kind of arrogant?
No, I honestly think I've always been really confident. I moved around a ton when I was little. I mean, really my whole life until New York, I moved around every 3 years. So I think there is a certain gumption that comes with having to always be the new kid. Mm-hmm. And you always have to reintroduce yourself. You always have to quickly make friends. You always have to kind of be able to speak for yourself, you know? And I think in that moment, I was just like, I got nothing to lose. This is who I am. And I really did believe in myself. I think that's the thing. I really did believe that I could do it and figure it out. And so I did. I ended up getting the job. Stayed there for 8 years. I ended up being the marketing director there. Was like, you know, one of the top three people at the company. And then one day my boss pulled me aside and said, You don't belong here anymore. You need to be an entrepreneur. He's like, you've always been an entrepreneur even within these walls. He's like, I'm gonna pay you for 2 months, go start a company. And was pretty much the worst day of my life, probably. Well, one of them, not the worst. So it was the most crushing career day of my life, because it felt like I got fired, even though someone was doing me a favor by firing me, but I was getting fired in the sense that he was like, I can't pay you what you're worth. There's nowhere for you to go. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And I was so afraid of the uncertainty of that moment. And I had never had that. I had always grown up with that level of uncertainty. But in the last 8 years, I had been really clinging on to the fact that I had had a lot of consistency. Then I realized I left that lunch crying. My last day after that was in 2 days. He was like, let's not drag this along. I'm going to pay you for 2 months. Just spend two more days getting your things together. And I went to a diner. I walked around for 2 hours in the snow. I went to a diner and sat there and I wrote down all the things that I found important in my life and the things that I wanted to do. And I probably looked like one of those like serial killer notes. Like, you know, the people that like are like writing like murder in their like notebook. It probably looked like that, uh-huh. But just like about like hopes and dreams. And I just like ate cold scrambled eggs and drank 8,000 cups of coffee, like shitty diner coffee. And I was just like, what am I going to be? What am I going to do? Like, I was just so low. And I was like, well, I looked at my paper and what I realized was the thing I loved was people. And I was like, okay, well, one of the things I like to do is plan events. So I was like, I'm going to be an event planner. So I went home and I said, either I can apply for jobs and go back to the safety of someone else's dime, or I can truly step into being an entrepreneur and start an event planning company. And so I went home and I bought a website and I shabbily built it on Squarespace. And I started my event planning company that day. But 2 weeks before that, I had actually gone on an informational interview for a fitness social media job. And I had started an Instagram account just for that interview because I had no experience. And I hadn't even gotten past the phone interview, basically. They were like, you have no experience. And so, but I had continued to post on Instagram because I was finding this little baby community. And I was like, this is cool. I have like 300 people in my life that I don't know that live all over the world. And we talk every day about wellness and fitness. And I thought that was a really cool perk of that really shitty, like I didn't make it through a job interview. So that was 2 weeks prior to me getting fired. And so I continued as I was building my event planning company to continue to post on Instagram about wellness and fitness. Not as an expert, just as a human person that was on a journey with it. And I got to a point years later in like 2017, where I was doing both things and I was starting to make money on Instagram and I was running an event planning company and I was like, shit, I need to pick one of these things. And so I took a break from event planning and I was like, I'm going to try this social media thing full time. And now I've seven people that work with me and I do this full time and talk a lot about kind of how to be an empowered person in all aspects of life, not just fitness and wellness. So that was the before.
Okay. So there's
– that was a very long-winded before.
No, it's amazing. And I think having that experience is going to be so helpful for people listening. So there are a few things that I want to unpack. I think we were talking on your podcast about like thinking about the worst things that we think could happen to us and how we can deal with that.
Yes.
And I think having the experience of the worst thing that you could probably think of happening, how did you deal with the feelings around that? I mean, I know that it sounds like you were kind of just methodical about it and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to go like write down what I love. But how did you deal with the feelings and like the fear?
And I am skipping over so many moments of like utter desperation, screaming into the universe, literally walking around Park Slope in Brooklyn is where I lived at the time. And I remember that night I was walking. It was so cold. It was 11 p.m. I couldn't sleep. I was like, I'm going to go on a walk, which like ladies don't do that at night. But I was walking and I remember stopping in front of a flower shop and I had texted a coworker that I knew was looking for a nanny. And I was like, I want to talk to you tomorrow about the nanny job. And then I walked in front of a flower shop and it had a sign on it that said part-time help needed. And I wrote the number in my phone and I remember feeling so shitty about myself. I was so low. Neither one of those jobs is a bad job, but I was a marketing director who had 8 years of experience, and all I thought I could do at that moment was – all I felt like I deserved was to do these kind of like jobs that were cobbled together mm-hmm. that were like not in anything that built into a dream. And the feeling of waking up the next morning and going, for myself, I need to delete this number out of my phone. I need to text this other person about the nanny job and saying, I actually don't want to be a nanny. I don't even really like kids. Like, I had to do that. I had to feel the feelings of desperation to be able to come out of them. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this on my podcast as well, just like hitting your low. And sometimes the low is the leverage, yeah. you know, and it scoops you out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that shim you put between the tire and the mud that gets you out of it. And so there was an incredible amount of desperation in that and thoughts of failure. I did sit down and think, okay, if this event planning business fails, what is the worst thing that happens? And I said to myself, and I remember even calling my mom, I said, if this thing fails, could I move home for a few months while I figure it out and make money there and just spend time living for free? Because the worst thing in my mind was not being able to pay my rent, not having a place to live. And I remember thinking in my head, I have a family that would take me in. And if my family didn't take me in, I have plenty of friends that in a pinch I could ask if I could sleep on their couch. Mm-hmm. It would be incredibly hard. It would be incredibly humbling. I would feel like shit about it, but I could live.
Yeah.
I could live.
Right.
And so I think going through that worst case scenario was that leverage that I needed to move forward. And we were talking about this in my podcast, but just you know, if you're out there listening and you're like I'm in the shit of it, it's like sometimes being in the shit of it is that has to happen.
Yeah, and I think there are a few parts to that. I think like fear and desperation is a great motivator. It's a great totally. Place to start. It feels really shitty at the time, but it galvanizes you to, you know, take action, right? And I also think, like we were talking about on your podcast, like looking back, it never feels like it in the moment, but I'm sure anybody can look back on their life and see something that was really painful and really challenging that became one of the best things that happened or something good came from it.
Totally. So. Do you feel like the things that you've been through have really helped you be better at this job?
Completely. Yeah. And I was on a podcast the other day and somebody was asking me like, well, how do you get vulnerable and how do you decide what to share and what not to share? And like, there are parts of my life that I'm private about. My husband, he's very private, and my relationship and stuff like that. I'm not like an oversharer, but when it comes to struggles and things that I'm dealing with and like the real shit, it was never even a question that I wouldn't share it, because I feel like getting through that, I have a responsibility to use my experience for good,
yeah.
you know, not let it all have happened in vain. And, you know, I always say like being an alcoholic is the best thing that ever happened to me, because it allowed me to connect with other people.
Yeah.
And feel a purpose and empathize. Yeah.
I think, you know, I think we can, you can have the same, you can have these emotions in one kind of breath. You can have the emotion of being like, that sucked. And that was the worst thing. And it was so hard. And I'm so like traumatized from that. And I'm so hurt from it. But then you can say, but that is like the thing that gives me my power too. Mm-hmm. And like the crappiest things have also, you know, made me go, oh, I understand people. I understand people more. Or if someone says I'm going through something, I'm like, oh, I've been through things too. And I feel that. And it kind of, it's this really painful bond that mm-hmm. you can have with the world. But it's the thing that makes you able to talk on a podcast.
Yeah.
And to have an influence on people. And mm-hmm. And I think you're so spot on with that, you feel responsibility for it. Mm-hmm. I do too.
Yeah. So I want to talk about, so you started your Instagram account. What was your lifestyle like then? What was wellness to you at that point?
So I had been through an interesting journey with wellness. So I had been very, very quote unquote unhealthy, kind of my mom was like fat-free mom. we all had a snack well as mom. You know, she was like a healthy choice frozen dinner energy mom. She was – that was her – it was the 90s. We were all trying our best. The food tasted really bad, you know. It was like very prepackaged, low-fat food. And so that was my idea of health when I was growing up. So as soon as I turned 16 and had a car, I was like, F you, mom, F you, diet culture. I'm going the opposite way, which was do whatever you want all the time.
Going to Chili's.
Going to Chili's. Going to like – if you're from Texas, anyone out there, Whataburger. I was like at Whataburger like 3 a.m. most nights when I was like partying. I also went through a stage where I drank a lot. I partied a lot. I would never compare my experience to alcoholism, but definitely it was very reliant on alcohol to have like social interaction. I was definitely a party girl. And so I did that from like basically age – I started drinking when I was 14. So 14 to like 25, that was a lot of my life was going out. I lived next to the Mexican border when I was in high school, and so we were in Mexico going to clubs every day, 3 days out of the week. Hard, hard, like, lifestyle. So that was my version of health through my teenage years and through college. It was a lot of drinking, a lot of excess. I ended up gaining a lot of weight. I was, like, 225 pounds. I was definitely – I loved every pound of it, and I think that was the unique experience that I had was I really did feel – very confident in myself. I didn't actually know I was overweight or living an unhealthy lifestyle. I was having a really good time and it didn't hinder me. I had friends. I had love interests. I had sex. I had all of it. So when I moved to New York, I was actually at a baby shower with a guy friend and we made a bet. We were like, we're going to try to like eat healthy and like work out. I had never really worked out ever. So this was like 2009, probably. And so I went to the library. There were libraries back then. I know there are still libraries, but most of us get our information online. But I went to the library and I checked out Arnold Schwarzenegger's book on bodybuilding.
I love that. I read this about you last night when I was like preparing for this. And I was like, that's amazing. Like
it was this huge, huge ass book. It was like, it's giant. And I was like, I don't want to be a bodybuilder, but I want to learn how to lift weights because I'd seen my mom lift weights when I was younger. And I was like, that looks like something I could do. And I was like, I want to be a little bitch and just go running. I was like, I want to learn how to do something. Like, and I'm not saying people that run are little bitches. I had that mentality then. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to like use my brain for something. Mm. And so I loved learning about fitness. I loved learning about muscles. I loved learning about the science of the body. So that's how I would learn. So I would take pictures of pages and exercises and I would go to the gym and do them.
I feel like that's very unique.
It was a really fucking weird part of time.
I feel like you made it really hard for yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's like, honey, that's me. Like, how can you make this difficult and complicated? And so – I remember at one of the first works I ever did, I was like holding little like 2.5 pound weights or something. And I was just like, I will never get to the point of health. Like I was just like, this is so pointless. But I stuck with it. And I like really did transform my body, but I didn't mean to. I meant to transform my mind and that's what happened too. And so I lost 70 pounds, but I think I lost 70 pounds because losing 70 pounds was never my goal. My goal was to be interested in something, mm-hmm. and I really was. And then I kind of got into, you know, doing the fitness Instagram stuff. I found BBG, liked it at the time. Actually, I hated it at the time, and I liked that I was part of a community. And then, you know, that was at the time when I was starting to, like, grow on Instagram and – I was at the skinniest I've ever been. I was at the smallest I've ever been. Most people would probably look at me and say I was like the healthiest I've ever been. And I was in like – I was at the darkest point of my life with my body. I hated what I was doing. I hated the workouts. I hated thinking about food this much. I hated the restriction. And I didn't like the way I looked. I didn't.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I had the same experience when I was like counting macros and eating, you know, X amount of calories a day. And at the time, I thought that I was doing the right thing, right? I was like, sure. Oh, I'm planning out my food so I don't have to think about it so much. And I'm just following this program, and that's that. And I don't have to obsess over it. But when I was at my quote unquote goal body, even though the goalpost keeps moving, when that's sure. when the motivating factor of working out is to get a certain aesthetic, I feel like you're never going to be satisfied.
No.
You're always going to want more or less or whatever it is. But yeah, I had that experience too of being the most unhappy when I was at my probably most lean
right.
time. And I think that's important for people to hear because, I mean, we all
so wanna... many people think that when you get there,
yeah.
you're going to have this sense of relief. And unfortunately, the relief doesn't come with the body.
Mm-hmm.
The relief comes with your mindset changing and thinking about it all less. Like people ask me very frequently about like body positivity and things like that. And I always say, like, I'm actually not a fan of body positivity. I'm more of a fan of like body confidence. And with confidence comes both negative and positive thought.
Mm-hmm.
You just think of it less. You're building yourself up in other ways. Like, what the hell else are you interested in? At that time, I found myself obsessed with myself. I didn't have space for others. I didn't have space to care about other things. I was suffering socially. I was suffering in my work because I would skip meetings because I was like, I have to do two workouts today and like I don't have time for that meeting. And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
Not that you should obsess over work versus fitness, but I was literally – it was all out of guilt.
Right.
It's never out of like – no, I just am feeling – like it, when you're in that mindset, it's never like enjoyment.
Right. Yeah, I don't know who wants to do a second workout for enjoyment.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a few people that are that intense about working out.
Right.
But it's very few and far between, and it's not most of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you said that confidence isn't a choice, it's a practice. What are some ways that you practice confidence?
I think it's a daily opportunity. I'm not going to say it's a struggle because I don't want to frame it in that way. For me, I listened to this thing the other day and I can't even remember who said it, but I was like, yes, that's it. It is the willingness to do something. So it is a willingness. It's an openness. It's not about changing your mind about something like overnight. It's not a light switch. It's about a willingness to try and put yourself out there in a new way and a willingness to believe in yourself. And so, you know, people think confidence is I'm going to wear this skimpy dress and go to this thing and I'm going to pretend to be confident. That's my confidence. It's like, no, your willingness is to say, okay, what if I thought less about my body and what other people think of it today? And whether you wear the dress or you wear sweatpants, it's a mindset. It's about am I willing to think less about this? Am I willing to try something new? Like I remember the first time I went rock climbing. I know that's a weird thing to equate confidence to, but I was like, what if I can't do it? What if I look stupid? What if I look like the only person in the room that doesn't know how to do it and I don't know how to use the equipment? I was like, what if I just try? Like,
yeah,
what if I just open myself up to it? What happens then? Mm-hmm. And that's building confidence. That's the practice of confidence because, yes, I might be the only one that doesn't know. I might look stupid. I might not know what the things do. I might have to ask for help. But you are building toward being confident
mm-hmm.
by putting yourself in that situation.
So how do you get yourself there?
I think you have to start really small.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you a really small example, and I've used this on Instagram before. So I would always see people that would wear sports bras when they would work out. And confidence is not just about your body. This is like about everything in life. But this is a very tactile example. I would always see people working out in sports bras. And even if I was like really, really in shape or fit at one point, I would never because I was like, first of all, that looks too showy. Second of all, I'm not that person. Third of all, I was like internally fat. Because I was like, my mindset was fat. My mindset was not healthy enough to do that. People are going to talk about me or think certain things about me. But then I also was like, I don't want to be a show off. And then you back away and you're like, literally nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Everybody is thinking about themselves, yeah. First of all.
Nobody gives a shit about you and your sports bra. Right. Nobody will even notice. And so what I did one day was I was so hot. It was after a workout. I was so hot. I was so sweaty. My tank top was clinging to me. I was just like really uncomfortable. It was in the summer. I was just like, I'm just stretching. But like, what would it be like to just take off my shirt while I'm stretching? What would that feel like? And I did it. And I stretched without a shirt on. And then I remember getting up and being like, okay, that wasn't that bad and no one cared. And I put my shirt back on and I walked out of the gym. And that was like that for that day, that was me practicing, mm-hmm. practicing little things. And I think for a lot of people, they feel like they have to make this huge jump right away. I'm confident or I'm not. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't care who you are. I've had literally a Victoria's Secret supermodel on my podcast, and she struggles with this too. Mm-hmm. So like you're not alone. Right. Follow the account Celebface. You'll see that.
Love Celebface.
Oh my God. If so you want to go down a deep dark hole, go down Celebface. But just like you see how much even like the people that you see as confident struggle with their own confidence. Mm-hmm. And so I think if there's anything that you feel like you're coming up against it, you're like – walking into a social situation and you're like, oh, I don't know anyone. Everyone's going to think I'm weird. Everybody knows each other. Like, what does it look like? You don't have to go into the center of the room and like pull your top off. I don't know why that, you don't have to be the life of the party, but what would it look like to stand on the edge, find another person that's standing there and just ask them something about themselves? Mm-hmm. Can you handle it? And then you realize that that little act, that is a step towards feeling more comfortable and confident in who you are. And that might feel like nothing, but it's huge.
Yeah. And when you do that over and over and over again, little things add up. So it's so rewarding.
Totally.
Like this past year, I talk a lot about how at the beginning of the year, I was like, I'm going to walk through fear this year. Like I was reflecting on 2018 and I was like, it was a good year. So many good things happened, but like I felt like I could see where fear was like holding me back in certain ways, and I decided to just walk through it. And it's like the more you do it, as with anything, the less daunting it is,
yeah.
And the more you're comfortable with it. And
what's one thing that you feel like in the last 12 months that you've, even if it's a small thing that you've like were fearful of or had hesitation towards that you have done or put yourself out there and that it's paid off?
The podcast.
Yeah.
1,000%. I mean, I had a million reasons for why I shouldn't start a podcast, and it was something that I had wanted to do for like a year, but I didn't know how, and I didn't know where to start, and I didn't know what to talk about, and I didn't think I could guide conversations, and I was just fear. So many reasons not to do it. And finally, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to – like everybody sucks when they start.
Yeah.
It's a learning curve, right? Like with anything, and I'll never know if I never try. And it has been so rewarding because I've gotten to do this. And I – like, you know, working in social media or digitally can be really isolating.
Yes.
You do events and stuff. And so there are ways to get out there. But a lot of the day-to-day work – it's
alone.
Like, yeah, you're alone, you're behind a screen, and I kind of get comfortable there, right? Like I'm an extroverted introvert. I get my energy from being alone. So I can go through an entire day without having any human contact, and that's where I'm comfortable, but it's not what's best for me.
Sure.
So yeah, doing the podcast, I've met so many amazing people and created relationships, and having like real conversations with people about real shit has been like the most rewarding thing. I don't know how you feel because you started this year too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's my favorite thing that I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to get kind of underneath what people are putting out there naturally themselves and to pull back the curtain a little bit and say, let's just have a conversation about who you are and what you're doing. And my podcast is more advice-based, and we answer reader advice needs. But you start to get to know someone through that. You get to know their experiences. And I think it's a real That's what we need right now. You know, it's a scary thing to know one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we all have these facades that totally. We try to hide behind.
Especially with podcasting. Like, you tend to, you know, interview or talk to people that are, you know, in their own right, whatever that world might be, kind of known or mm-hmm. An expert or someone that is influential or whatever. And I think that's – that in and of itself is, like, a fearful thing.
Yeah, completely.
Do you think that with kind of, like, challenging that fear of, like, the podcast, do you feel like you learned so many other things about yourself?
Of course, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it has tentacles, right? So yeah. It affects every other aspect of my life. I found myself more comfortable in social situations and, you know, like my husband is in entertainment. So I would find myself at these events with really accomplished people all the time. And that combined with being like kind of newly sober when we got together, it was very intimidating for me. Something that I knew really early on is that people just want to talk about themselves anyway. So that's like my – whenever I go into one of those situations, totally. I just ask people about themselves.
Right.
And like they – who cares? Like so there's nothing to be intimidated by. But I did find – and I got more comfortable with it over the years. But I found that by having the podcast and sitting down and having these conversations with people, like I feel more comfortable in the world. And I think it's because I know – like I believe in myself. Mm-hmm. But I also – like to your point before, like everybody is dealing with their own shit. And yeah. like same as you, like I'll have people on who are notable or, you know, experts in their field and whatever. But at the end of the day, we're all dealing with the same stuff. And it's comforting. It's comforting and it's amazing to me. I feel like this is kind of the theme of the podcast, but like when we talk about our struggles and other people talk about their struggles, those are the moments that define their lives and their character. And they're the things that they're most grateful for because it steers the direction. And I think it's just so important because we all try to avoid discomfort at every level, every opportunity that we can. We want to be comfortable. But like it's so cliche, but we don't grow in comfort zones. You know?
Do you find that – or what – I should not assume that it's a podcast, but what about this job, whether it's podcasting or Instagram, feels the most uncomfortable but like has been good?
The most rewarding?
Yeah.
Podcasting.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I love Instagram. I have a love-hate relationship with Instagram. I yeah. love it.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Literally, I mean, if you do it for a living or just are a user of it, we all have a love-hate.
Yeah. The thing that I love about it is connecting with other people.
Yeah.
And then I've loved to have the opportunity to take that offline and meet people in real life. And, you know, kind of back to what we were saying before, like using my experience for good and just getting to see how other people are impacted by it or how it helps somebody. So there are definitely benefits to it. But sure. then there's also like the dark side of social media, right?
Oh, yeah.
So let's get into that.
Yeah,
so
let's talk about it.
So you were doing your... You started a fitness account. How did it turn into something more?
At that point when I was at the kind of really obsessive kind of like self-loathing part of my life, I had a shift of my mind. I was like, what am I doing? I've never felt so bad about my body. I've never been so questioning of my confidence. I've never been a person that had to pull others for like a temperature on who I was. Like – it was such a strange thing because I was really having an out of body experience. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I've got to reverse this. Like I've got to go back to the way it was. And I didn't need to go back to the body that I had. I had to go back to the mindset that I had. So I was like, what do I like about myself? What makes me me? Like I don't need to be like everybody else. And like what about me is unique and special. And so the reason I transitioned my account to like a lifestyle account is because I was like, I care so much more about other things than fitness. Mm-hmm. To be honest, like fitness is like 10% of my day and my interest, and there's a lot more. And I was finding myself seeing just like so much focus on like people's bodies that I was like, I can speak to people's bodies because this is clearly something that people want to talk about. But how can I do it in a helpful way that isn't just adding to a pile of kind of just like self-loathing behavior or obsessive behavior. And so I was like, okay, so how can I start talking more about the mind? How can I start talking more about other things? And I still talk about beauty and things, but I was finding myself going, what would people – like I'm not going to say this – I'm not going to write this thing. I write long captions on Instagram. I'm like, I'm not going to write this thing because, you know, I'll lose people or people want to hear this from me. And, you know, honestly, I had to be like, fuck that. And every time I would be like, I don't want to write this thing or people won't respond well, I was like, that is a great indicator that that is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing because I'm having a visceral reaction to it. It's something that I want to do, and I'm literally crafting what I want to do based on the opinions of others, and that is not who I am. Mm-hmm. And so I had to kind of start going, okay, anything that I feel deep in my core, I'm going to share. If people don't like it and I lose people, that's okay. I still have that mentality. I do think by talking about more real shit, I've had plenty of like growth and things like that, but I'm not focused on growing my Instagram account. Mm-hmm. I'm not growing a presence on Instagram. I am communicating things that I care about on a platform. And if that makes people follow me or unfollow me, I don't care. I'm not for everyone, and that's all right.
What do you attribute your growth to?
On Instagram specifically?
Yeah.
The more I told the truth about who I was and shared the discomfort of life, but actually offered a way out or just offered my experience, I think that's how I grow. The most shared posts I have are when I'm just literally telling stories about how I feel. Mm-hmm. And I realized that stories are powerful, but the truth is the most powerful thing, even if it's ugly. Mm. Even if it's not what everybody wants to hear. It's not the niceties of the world. And it's not just like anything, like it's not just, I don't just get like bumps of people coming because I share negative things. It's I share real things, and they could be negative or positive. Like I remember I shared a story about when I moved into my apartment that I live in now. I moved into a 2-bedroom apartment, and I was single but dating at the time, but just I was single. And everyone else in my building is either married or married with kids or their roommates. And I was moving from a studio downstairs upstairs, and everybody in my building kept asking me, when did y'all move in? When did y'all move in? And I was really hit by that because I was like, in this world, it's not possible for people to think I might be here by myself. Mm-hmm. That I might be able to afford it, but also that I would be willing to do that on my own and that I would want to make a home for myself and myself alone. And I had to wrestle with that. I had to wrestle with the fact that like so much of the world's validation of people, particularly women, is who they're with and being partnered and that they couldn't possibly live a lush, full life without that.
Right.
And you know, for a long time, not for a long, long time, but for a while, I lived in that apartment alone, and I would still get the same question: Who do you live with? You know, they would ask questions about we, and I'm like, at first I felt embarrassed. I was like, oh yeah, we moved in May, and you know, and I would hide the fact that I lived there alone, and then I was like, fuck that. I live in a 2-bedroom apartment in New York City alone, and I'm fucking proud of that. And my second bedroom isn't for a baby or a husband or another person. It is for my beauty supplies. And I'm going to say that, you know, and being like, my second bedroom is actually like beauty storage and a closet and people being like, oh, okay. You know, but there was so much weight in that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about kind of these societal pressures that we feel as women and as people in general of that your wholeness comes from togetherness. And I don't think that's necessarily true. And I remember writing that and being like, people are not going to resonate with this. Like, I think this is like a very individual experience. But I shared it anyway. And it was like such a widely shared post. But it was also so many people wrote me and they were like, I feel this to my core. Mm-hmm. I feel alone in my singleness. I feel like I'm not doing a good job of being a person because I'm alone.
Right.
And you know what? It's been a really beautiful thing to then also share my relationship now and someone moving into that. But having just sharing like someone moving in and being partnered loses its luster when you don't share the other part of it.
Right.
Of that I was also happy before.
Yeah.
I was also fully content before. I loved my life before I, you know, met my long-term partner. Like, but if you don't share one or the other because you think that there's stigma surrounding one or both, mm-hmm. the people don't have any perspective for – they can't share in your joy right. because they haven't been there before.
Right.
They haven't seen the spectrum of it. So I think, you know, any time that I feel like something doesn't matter, I'm like it truly does and I have to share it.
Mm-hmm. I like that perspective. It can be hard. I mean, I'm curious how you deal with – like, I know for me, if I write a long Instagram caption and it's something really personal, like if I write about my recovery or trauma or something like that, and I put it out there and it falls flat, which has been happening
sure.
with Instagram. People say it's the algorithm. I don't know. Whatever. How do you deal with that? Because I know for me, it feels like I'm putting energy out there and it's like so much energy and then to not have anything reciprocated,
yeah.
even though that's like a form of validation, I guess, but it's to like start a conversation. And when it doesn't happen, how do you deal with that?
Can I ask you a question back first? You tell them a podcaster too. What do you think people come to you for? And what do you want people to come for you to you for? And are they the same?
I don't know. I mean, I think because I kind of share like you about kind of more deep personal things. And then I also share about like what shoes
sure.
I'm wearing and like makeup and stuff. So I think that there are people who come to me and for that, and then they see the deeper stuff and they're like, okay, I'm out. And then I think the opposite happens. I think people sure. come to me for more substance and then they see me posting about boots and they're like, okay. So anyway,
Social media is hard. It's so hard. It's hard to be yourself on social media and not yeah. people judge you. And the thing is, like, what I always try to remember when I'm putting things out there is everyone is coming from their own experience and their own trauma and their own mm-hmm. insecurity. So, of course, like when I share something and it doesn't resonate with people, it's difficult. But I would say more often than not, even if people can't connect with it, I can I sleep really well next to myself every night, you know, and I always try to remember that of like, am I proud of this? Like if I died tomorrow and this was like kind of a diary of what I put out into the world, would I be proud of it? Mm-hmm. Would I say it was true? Would I say it was honest? Did I do my very fucking best to right. put out there something that mattered? And the thing is, it's like there have been times where I've lost people because I wasn't just posting workouts or mm-hmm. what I was eating or about, oh, I got my workout in today. And I do still put some of that out there. But I realized that I lost people, but I gained so many more people that were there for the reasons that I wanted to be there.
Yeah, like really engaged people who are yeah. there with you for the ride.
Totally.
Highs and lows.
Yeah. And also some people are like, yeah, I love to know what skincare you're using, but I also really want to know like – your ideas on like vulnerability or trust yeah. or relationships or cheating or these things. And so I do think, unfortunately, women particularly we've really convinced ourselves that we're very, very simple and we're not. And I think we're having a reckoning of that, especially on social media, because, you know, you follow this person for this reason, you follow this person for this reason, and they kind of check your boxes. And sometimes it's hard when someone is both mm-hmm. and that people don't know how to digest that sometimes, yeah. especially if you've over the years, and this is with me too, have begun to share more stuff that's right. hard or gritty. But then people become attracted to that and new people come for that. And you know, people that aren't there for it or are triggered by it, like that's – I'm not offended if you need to go.
Right.
But I sleep very well next to myself every night, and I'm sure you do too, yeah. of saying I'm doing this for the right reason, and whether I grow or more people hear it or not, if a post gets 1,000 likes or if it gets 10,000, I liked what I had to say and I was honest mm-hmm. and I said what I wanted to, and that is what this is about.
Have you lost your likes yet?
No, I haven't.
Me neither. I'm waiting. I'm like, come on.
I'm like, I want to post more videos of my dog. Yeah. Can you take these likes away? That'd be great. No, I mean, I like don't care about that.
Yeah.
I think the thing I get sensitive about is if no one sees it. If I see that no
That's
one
– the thing, yeah.
If you see the reach – if you guys don't know, there's like metrics on the back of Instagram. You can see how many people actually saw your post. It's a fucking bummer when people don't see it. If you see it and you hate it, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Great. Like right. Praise be.
Yeah.
You saw it. But when you make something and no one sees it mm-hmm. and you wrote it for them, you know, it's kind of a bummer. But, you know, we all – these are like very small problems in the grand scheme of things. We have good lives.
So how has having a career on social media and outside of social media, you're a speaker, you're an entrepreneur, you're out there, you're a podcaster. How has that affected or not affected your anxiety?
I think it actually has really helped it because I'm able to talk about it and be open about my struggles with mental health. Mm-hmm. And that connects you to people. And I think, saying as like a Virgo, someone that always had to be, I had a kind of moments of really tough parts growing up, that I had to be okay a lot. And I had to be really self-sufficient a lot. I was an only child. My dad was kind of not in the picture much and was raised by a single mom who's just trying to do her best. But we had a contentious relationship like most people do with their moms whenever I was a teenager. But I think I always had to be together, you know. And so finally doing the – I remember talking for the first time on Instagram about that I was suffering from I don't still suffer from it all the time, but I had a brief time where I was on medication and had panic disorder. And talking about it, writing that down was like the hardest thing ever because I was like, I look like I don't have my shit together. I look like something's wrong with me. And I was like, that's exactly why I need to write this. And now I talk about mental health so much. I talk about anxiety a lot. And the thing I've realized is social media can amplify your anxiety if your anxiety is hidden and it's a private struggle, and it can really make you feel more comforted when it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the beautiful thing about therapy too, is like being silent in the things that you think about and in your own head makes dealing with life very hard.
Yeah.
But if you can afford to and you can talk to someone else about it and let someone else in on your shit.
Yeah.
It makes everything so much more manageable. Like, it doesn't make it easier, but it makes it more manageable. And you also feel like you're not alone.
Right.
You know? And so I think social media has its own set of anxiety-producing things. But I think overall with my journey of mental health, it really does – really has actually helped me.
Yeah. I've had the same exact experience. And I think we're talking about like getting through fear and doing podcasts and connecting with other people and talking about our struggles on social media. But for people who don't have that platform or that option, I think the underlying theme is like honesty, yeah. openness, and community.
Yeah. Right. It's amazing what can happen if you just share what you're going through, even mm-hmm. if it's not like on social media. It's just like a friend or whatever. I remember when I was first talking about anxiety, mental health has become a very trendy thing to talk about, and I'm very happy for that. Like, I hope it's a trend that doesn't go away. But I remember talking about therapy with someone for the first time that I was going, and they were like, oh my God, thank you for saying that. I've been in therapy my whole life and I've never wanted to tell anyone because I thought it made me look really crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have this stigma around it still.
Yeah. And so I think crazy. Just like the sharing of that has been very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I hope for more of that. And I would encourage you, if you're listening to this and you're like, I feel really alone, I assure you, you're not. Like, even if it's not someone on Instagram, it's someone in your life. Like, someone you know that you've talked to in the last week is going through the same shit you are. Yeah. I can guarantee you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of curious, if you don't mind saying, what's the hardest thing that you've gone through that has been the most rewarding? Would it be that experience of getting fired?
Yeah, I think professionally, I think I went through a pretty, like, rough time with my dad, and he kind of popped out of my life unexpectedly for a period of time, and It was really hard because I just didn't understand it and I felt really worthless, and it guided how I saw a lot of relationships. And, you know, it was extremely painful, and I was going through that pain very alone. And so coming on the other side of that and working through it and learning a lot about myself and about forgiveness and about understanding trauma and how it can actually be used to make your life better, that was probably the most difficult and the most rewarding, because it injected empathy, it injected understanding, it injected that there's good on the other side of bad. And when you know that can happen, I'm sure you feel like this with recovery, when you understand and you see and you can look back and say, there was such good on the other side of that shit. Like, behind door number one is something good. Mm-hmm. Not easy, but good. It is – I'm so thankful that there is struggle in life, even if it's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I am 1,000% with you.
Yeah. Do you find – this is just going back to social media. Do you find that it gets to you? Like, I don't get a ton of, like, negativity, I think, because I'm a little self-deprecating. And also, like, I think certain people get it worse.
Mm-hmm.
I know certain people just – I know a couple of my friends that just get it really bad. How do you, like, process that? Or how, I mean, not that you get it bad, but how do you deal with it? Like, is that anxiety producing? It's got to be.
Not so much. So I actually don't get it really badly.
Okay, good.
I have, like, Fox – my husband said something about Sarah Sanders when she was the press secretary.
Right.
That was not nice. He's very outspoken, sure, politically. And they ran it on Fox News, and they put a link to my Instagram and was like, here's his wife that's half his age. Yeah. So it's like giving red meat to whatever.
Oh, God.
So I got all – one day I was just inundated with the most disgusting things you could ever imagine. That was hard because it was all at once, and yeah, it was like really intense. And the hardest part, though, was that people around me were like, well, just don't read it. And I was like, how am I the one that's wrong here?
Right, right.
That's easy.
It's like telling a woman that gets sexually assaulted, like, you shouldn't have been wearing that
skirt.
Right,
exactly.
Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. So that was really hard. But for the most part, like, the snarky comments that I'll get will either be about, like, my lifestyle, again, which I really don't – I don't flaunt anything on Instagram, or about my husband and his age. And I'm like, come on. You can do better than that. That's, like, low-hanging right. fruit. So – you know, I was really able to detach myself from Instagram a lot this year. It kind of – I got to a point, like, just like I got to a point with my drinking and using, where I got so uncomfortable that I had to make a change.
Sure.
And that's what I have to do. That's what happened with my gut health. It got so bad that I had to change certain things in my lifestyle. So, you know, I was really able to detach from, like, metrics, mm-hmm, and detach from kind of the return, like I was talking about earlier. And – my husband helped a lot too, because I got really in the weeds and he was like, why did you start this account? Like, go back to that and yeah, like, wake up every day and think, like, how can I help even one person today? And if you make that your guide, like, the rest will fall into place. And that's exactly what has happened. And then, like, in terms of trolls and just assholes on the internet, like, I know that if you're saying something mean to a stranger on the internet, you're not in a good place, and it's not – so, you know, it says more about the person than it does about me.
Sure.
And if I respond, sometimes I'll, like, clap back occasionally. If
it's, oh, yeah, me too. I love it. Oh, my
yeah.
God.
But if it's someone who I'm like, ooh, this person is, like, really probably hurting, I'll, like, you know, try to give them kindness back, or I just ignore it.
Yeah.
And I just kind of move on. So it used to really get to me. I would get, like, that gut feeling in my sure. stomach. And now I'm like, it's not.
Doesn't affect you as deeply. I think it depends on also, like, where you're at in
right.
your
like
day
if I'm
and life.
Super spiritual and meditating twice a day, and I'm, like, doing, like, helping people, and I'm feeling good, it's not going to affect me. I'm, like, unflappable, right? But if there's shit going on, then it can
I think that's
me
kind of what we were talking about, the confidence thing, is, like, mm-hmm, when you are building yourself up internally, you're not dealing with, you know, I can't remember again if this is on my podcast or your podcast. We've been recording these back to back. You'll have to listen to both.
Yes.
But basically, you know, like, when you feel filled up, like, things don't affect you so deeply that, mm-hmm, you know, you don't You're not comparing yourself to others. You're not, you know, kind of like questioning yourself constantly. It's like you feel filled. And I think that's the same, like you're saying about kind of like something harmful or hurtful. It doesn't penetrate as hard.
Right. Yeah. I kind of visualize it as like a boat on the ocean or something. And like the waves just don't, it's not as turbulent if I'm doing X, Y, and Z mm-hmm. to fill myself up and make myself feel whole. Mm-hmm. And so what do you do to fill yourself up?
I'm an extrovert. Mm-hmm. So definitely spending time with people, like quality time. I'm like an extrovert that loves to be in the center of a big group of people, but I also, that is actually not how I get energy. I get energy from the one-on-one time with others. And so I've tried to be really good at and really intentional about putting that into my life and schedule and not compromising on it. Really going, okay, how do I spend more time with people that matter to me? Not the quantity of people, but the quality of the people. I have a really great partner who is my best friend, and we really do prioritize our time. And then I also like to be by myself a lot, you know, and I think that's okay. You know, I think people are very shy about alone time. Or like being in the quiet of your own mind is like a terrifying thing, but I kind of welcome it. I'm mm-hmm. like, I'm not an introvert and I don't get energy from being alone, but I need it. It's mm-hmm. kind of like you know, you're the opposite of me. You're like the introverted, or you're the extroverted introvert, and I'm the introverted extrovert.
Right.
So I think also doing some personality tests and realizing what I actually needed mm-hmm. and what actually fills me up, and doing like, instead of doing like a food diary, do a like emotional diary of like, what did I do today and how did I feel? Did I have more energy or less energy after doing it? Like, I recorded a podcast today. Did I end that hour with more energy or less energy than I came? Okay, I spent time with this person. I also did a big relational inventory of people in my life. And this is a practice for anyone listening. Get a piece of paper, not your phone. Get a piece of paper and start writing down all the people that you really love spending time with, who really make you feel you leave feeling better. And just write them down quickly. Don't spend a lot of time. Give yourself like 2 minutes. Write them down. You will forget people, and that's part of the exercise. Then take time to look over those people and be like, who are the people that I feel like I forgot, but did you really forget them? Or are they people that actually don't feed you, but they are should people? I should love them. I should mm-hmm. have them in my life. Analyze it. Mm-hmm. Did you really forget them, or are they actually not people that feed you? Because I can guarantee that the list of people that do feed you will come quickly. And so doing that relational inventory for me has been very helpful in rationing out my time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to get into a couple listener questions.
Sure.
And to that point, this is why I kind of thought of it. Somebody asked, how did you find the one in New York City?
So we met on Tinder, very romantic story. We basically made a date. I canceled it. He was like, okay, how about this day? And I was like, this guy cannot, he's not going to like leave me alone. So I literally was like, I'll go out for one drink with this guy. And I have dated all of New York City, let me tell you that. So people are always like, how'd you find the one? And I think it's because I dated everyone else. You know, like I finished.
Process all of, them. Of
I got,
elimination.
Yeah, I got to the end and he was the only one left. No, I think there is something to that, though. I did put myself out there a lot. I've had long-term relationships. I've had lots of short-term relationships. I've dated. I loved being single. I really did. And I was uncompromising in who that person was going to be in my mm-hmm. life. And obviously I've had other long-term relationships, but this was the one that we really were like, I was like, holy shit, this is like, I think the person I'm going to end up with. Obviously we don't know the future. We don't know what will happen, but I think feeling comfortable in my singleness helped me feel comfortable in being sure about someone.
Totally.
and like loving it. Like not, yeah. not being like, oh, I'm single, but being like, oh, I'm single. This is like an opportunity for me to meet people and broaden my horizons and put myself out there, but also enjoy my alone time, enjoy doing things, you know, that I like to do. Fill yourself up with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think often singleness gets so, it's such a naughty word.
Yeah.
And it's like people legit, like my friends would tell Craig, my boyfriend now, they're like, she loved her life. Like she was not out there hunting for the one.
Right.
She was just out there having a really fun time and you happened to come along.
But I think that's how, thing. Yeah, I think that's how it happens
yeah.
too. Like
oh, yeah.
I found I loved being single too,
mm-hmm.
especially because I am an extroverted introvert. I loved having my own place. Being able – not having to answer to anybody, like
it's so good.
Doing whatever I wanted, wherever I wanted, with whoever I wanted. I mean just the freedom and the independence of that. And I was like – I feel like water seeks its own level, right? So when you get to that point where you're like happy with yourself and you're full and fulfilled, you're not looking for anybody to fill anything and you're like thriving, that's when like you find – your match.
Yes, absolutely. And I also think it helps you appreciate, like, I used to love how much alone time I had at home. I love that I could do whatever I wanted, no matter how weird it was mm-hmm. at home. And you're just like
SSB.
Oh,
did
yeah.
you watch
Secret
Sex
Single
the City?
Behavior? Yeah. It's my favorite thing. I'm like, you could eat whatever you want
yeah.
over the sink.
Yeah.
You can, like, eat your weird combinations. You can lay on the couch naked and watch terrible TV. Like, you can spend that secret Sunday fully in bed and not
yeah.
tell anyone that you didn't, like, do anything. Like, there's all these fun things. You can go and come as you please. But then I think the beauty of it was whenever now that I'm partnered and I have someone that lives with me and I see him all the time and we spend a ton of time together, it makes me appreciate that I can feel like I still have myself and how I feel about myself hasn't changed
mm-hmm.
just because someone else is
right.
around more, you know, and that I can feel – I feel freedom in that. I'm like – it doesn't feel like I'm – chained down and have to have secret behavior. It's like I can do my weird secret things around someone else.
Yeah.
And it's fine. And I think it helps you realize that.
Yeah. And that's the best feeling when you find the person that you can do your SSB.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, same.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. We'll do one more. And this
sure.
is kind of on the relationship thing a little bit. How do you not get self-conscious during sex?
I've never felt self-conscious during sex. But I think for a long time I was feeling like sex was about a man's pleasure and not my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll kind of answer – that's not her question, but I will answer that question because I really never felt – like I said, even when I was bigger, I never felt self-conscious about my body really.
Mm-hmm.
I was always like a sex with the lights on person. I felt sexy, so
right.
I exhibited that. But I think if you don't, start working on how you feel, again, confident in your own life
mm-hmm.
Outside of the bedroom, and that will overflow. Plus, I think if you're with the right person, you don't think about it.
Right.
Like, you can be, like, scummy, morning breath, disgusting, hair is all messed up, and have sex, and it's perfectly, like,
yeah.
just as sexy as lingerie time, like, tits up and out, you know, whatever. But I will say that I did focus my sexual life mostly on other people's pleasure for the majority of my sex life.
Mm-hmm.
And you become a provider of pleasure rather than experiencing it. I think a lot of people, particularly women, go through this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hello, we invented faking orgasms. Like, you know, like that was my world for a long time. And
isn't it when you actually think about it, isn't it crazy that that's actually a thing?
Yes. It's because a guy never has to
right.
fake. He can't fake it. It's
yeah.
either it's happened or it hasn't.
I said to my husband once, I was like, did you ever fake it? And he was like, no.
He's like, literally not possible
yeah.
for me. Also, like.
Like, it's so high, absurd.
High differences between
right.
men and women. But I will say that when I started to change my view on that and started going like, okay, sex is for both of our pleasure, not just mine and – I mean not just his. I was able to change my sex life and I did feel more comfortable because mm. it wasn't performative. It was pleasurable.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of the hairy territory we get into is, number one, women are afraid to a lot of times ask for what we want. We're afraid to have – opinions or desires because we are afraid that we'll get rejected for them or that someone might think they're weird or too much or that our bodies won't be acceptable or our smells or our tastes or whatever. It's like I remember I used to, like, before sex, like this might be TMI, like, go fucking wash my vagina or, like, wipe it with certain things and be like, like,
make it smell like, yeah, flowers.
I'm like, your fucking vagina doesn't smell like a lavender patch. Like, it's just a vagina, and, like, literally they don't care. They don't care.
That's the name of this podcast episode.
Literally, they won't wash their balls. They won't wash them. They'll smell weird. Everybody knows what balls smell like. If you're not a person that interacts with balls often, consider yourself lucky. But they all have a smell. They're a special flower, and they will not do anything to make them smell better if their sex is on the table. It's right. Just – it's going to happen. They're not going to, like, not have sex because of that. So once I got over the thought of constantly, like, framing it into what someone else might think about it, that is the part that made me more mm-hmm. confident. And also being able to ask for what you want. And I think that's in life, not just sex. The feeling of feeling the power to be able to ask for what you want and receive it, that builds confidence. Mm. That builds a level of strength in yourself. And everyone has the power to say no. Everyone has the power to say, I don't want to do that. And you know, even in sexual situations that I'd been in, I remember one time I wasn't feeling comfortable. I just wasn't down with what was happening. And I remember flashing back to my younger years and going, I would have just let it happen right. and just been like, just let it be over and I'll process that on my own. And like, this is not comfortable for me and this is not pleasurable. This hurts and I don't like this. And in that moment, feeling so in my own body and in my own mind that I was like, I actually don't feel comfortable with this and I want to stop. And like being able to say that in a situation that feels really vulnerable, I was like, that is the most growth like that I could possibly have. Yeah. It's like, I don't like this. This doesn't feel pleasurable and I want to stop.
It's like being completely honest
yes.
with yourself and true to yourself.
Yes.
Honoring that.
And not giving a shit what someone else yeah. thinks. And that to me, again, like we were talking about practicing confidence, you can practice that in the bedroom too of mm-hmm. saying, would you be willing to try this? It's vulnerable.
Right.
I actually am feeling really kind of insecure about my body right now. And I'm just trying to be open with you about that. Mm-hmm. That's an example. Hey, I actually don't like when you do this and it actually doesn't feel good. Can I show you another way that might feel better? Mm-hmm. These are all things very scary, but they're like small ways to build confidence in the bedroom. So,
and again, it's like, what's the worst thing that could yeah. happen?
And if you're with someone that like freaks out.
Yeah. When goodbye.
Hey, saved yourself a lot of time.
Yeah.
Sorry. I said my vagina wasn't not a lavender patch.
We're all friends here.
You're it's like, okay. And that's all we have time for.
On that note, well, it is all we have time for, but not because of that. Okay, so what is next for you? What do you have going on?
We're just continuing to build. I'm wanting to do more creative projects this year, have more guests on, just have better conversations. And I'm so excited for Instagram likes to go away.
Yes.
I'm excited to be putting out more content. And I want to do a live podcast tour this year. And I also am doing a political project this year, which I'm really excited about, to encourage people to get involved in the political process, whatever side they fall on, but encouraging them to take ownership of what's happening in the world.
We need that right now.
Yeah, we do.
Where can everybody find you?
You can find me most places at Shinae Alexander. It's C-H-I-N-A-E Alexander, the way it's been spelled for all of time. My podcast is called Press Send. You got to listen to our episode together. Yeah, you got to do double duty, guys, because some of this stuff probably didn't make sense because we were referencing the other episode. So it's called Press Send. We take listener questions that they're going through in their own life and I answer it with a cool guest. So check us out.
Yes, check us out. If you didn't listen to that yet, go listen to it now. And it's such an amazing podcast. Everything you're doing is so amazing. You can tell that you're just so like you've settled into
thank you.
So
you
well. Too. And you have so much to offer. So everyone go follow Shinae.
Yes.
I'm sure you already are.
Well, we'll see. And more together soon.
Yes.
Love to do more.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.